BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
I'm reading from Captain Duck by Jez Albrough.
Thank God.
It's one of my children's favourite books.
Finally.
And it employs a rhyming scheme that's very popular in children's fiction for children of a certain age. Julia Donaldson employs a similar rhyming scheme in The Gruffalo and that series of books, Room on the Broom, etc. I'll give you an example. Pop, pop, coughs the spluttering truck. No more petrol left, quacks Duck. It's good I stopped near my friend Goat. He uses petrol in his boat.
Yes.
Duck rap, tap, taps at Goat's back door. Waits a while, then taps once more. Do you get it now?
Very good. It's kind of Zeusian.
I was thinking a fun game might be for someone to read out the first half of a sentence.
Try and guess the rest.
Yeah, and the other person fills
Do
in
it.
The rest.
Go for it.
Still no answer. So instead...
I put... Well, do I need the context?
No.
I just got to make it up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Still no answer. So I said, get that filthy whore out of my bed. Yeah,
it's hard to keep it clean, isn't it? And you've immediately failed. It's a children's book.
It's a children's book. Okay, let me try that once again. Shall I try that once again?
No.
No, give me another one then.
Hooray, cries Duck, a stroke of luck. Keep it clean.
Hooray, cries Duck, a stroke of luck. There goes an available tuck, tuck, tuck. They're in Bangkok.
They just called tuk-tuks, though.
Yeah, but I put an extra one in.
Three of them, a little flotilla. I'll only take a drop or two.
Because drinking alcohol is bad for you.
Because drinking booze is bad for you. Yeah. That would be good, yeah.
I added the extra syllable in, I mean, on purpose.
Are you down with this game, though?
I'm down with it, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if we were allowed to do a filthy version
of this podcast? It would be very obvious.
Especially with Captain Duck.
Do me another one.
All right. There's one last thing I need to bring.
What are we looking for here?
Something
amusing.
Amusing. There's one last thing I need to bring. Some crisps and Vaseline for my ring. It's like to get the ring
on,
off.
Wait,
his...
No,
oh,
wait,
did
wait,
you?
Wait,
I don't
wait,
know what
wait.
You were thinking.
Hang on, some
but
crisps.
No. Yeah.
And Vaseline for my ring.
Yeah, because he's got his wedding ring
stuff.
Yeah,
stuck. But why would you need crisps?
Needs to... What were
why
you
would you need crisps?
But it's for a trip.
Yeah, but why would he need crisps
in case
to get
he gets peckish
off?
While
oh,
he's trying to get the ring off?
And then if you were to use the rude reading of that line, why would he need crisps? He rubs them into
his... No. Listen, this is dangerous territory, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Who
oh, also, I'm pretty sure that Jez Albrough, the author of Captain Duck, won't be pleased about it.
This isn't how it goes when you read it to your kids, is it?
No, it's not, but I'm always thinking it.
Your mind is wandering.
Yeah, my mind wanders. Sorry, my little computer. Listen, folks, sorry to ramble. We've got a lot to get through this week.
Yeah, it's a podcast. You're listening to a podcast right now. If you're confused, it's of the highlights of the Adam and Joe radio show on BBC Six Music. It's probably going to last something approximating 50 minutes, depending on the quality of the show.
If might
it
be an hour.
If it was a poor show, it may be less than that. If it was a good show in the eyes and ears of our producer, then it might last longer. There's going to be bits and bobs and chit-chatting and jingles and stuff.
An hour is about right for me in my shed with my glass of wine.
Do you think?
Yeah.
You still listen to it regularly?
Definitely.
Every week?
Absolutely.
With the glass of wine. What day?
Well, the night it comes out, Monday night. Usually.
Really? What do you think? How's the standard?
Last week, I wasn't so sure. I was feeling ill and I was banging on about my elbow.
You weren't
and
so sure about yourself or the overall quality of the programme?
I sort of enjoyed the overall programme.
The two are inextricably linked.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. This morning, to be honest, sometimes I get a bit freaked out by the idea that people are listening.
Right.
When we get a lot of I like to imagine that no one's listening. like in the old days.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Sometimes it unnerves me when I
not
know
many
people
are. It's only like
I know,
a
I know,
shop full
I know
of
it's
people.
It's true, but still it unnerves me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Like that thing where you're standing next to the emergency lever on the tube and you have to stop yourself from pulling it.
Mm.
You can become kind of self-aware and nervous.
Right.
I was getting a bit of that this morning. The jitters.
The jitters. Bit of nerves.
Bit of nerves.
That's good to keep you on top of your game, man.
Mm.
Well, let's see whether you were on top of your game or whether you're a massive loser. Why are you laughing? Because that was so lame.
Well, because it's so
segue.
Ruthless. It's so ruthless.
It was ruthless.
It turned from
it?
A sort of gentle confession of vulnerability
into
a sort
shouting.
Of ruthless judgment.
That's what I'm like. Here we go. Enjoy.
Are you ready for the Adam and Joe podcast? Make with little nuggets from their radio show. Mildly amusing mini moments from the past. Beautifully preserving super stereo. 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 Everybody likes it from your sister to your mother.
So you're probably wondering how my elbow is.
Yes, last week listeners, Adam was telling us about what he thought was a spider bite on his elbow. It had a huge pustulant swelling on it.
Wasn't pustulant.
It's like you've got a double, what's that thing called?
Elbow.
Well, is there a name for the pointy bit, the pointiest pointy bit on the end of the elbow?
Elbow.
The elbone.
The elbone.
It's like you've got a swollen elbone.
I do. I feel like I've got an extra protrusion.
That's quite a good word, isn't it? Elbone.
Elbone, yeah. That's the kind of word that children use.
Thanks.
like eyebrow.
Yeah.
Did you used to think they were called eyebrow?
I should have texted that in for the Text the Nation a couple of weeks ago. Body part names.
Ah, elbone. Yeah. Well, I've got an extra elbone now, as you pointed out. Yeah, on my right elbone.
And it's sort of peeled as if it's sunburned. You've lost a bit of skin there, mate.
I know, mate. It was, it's all... I mean, it's still painful, but it's a little bit better than it was last week.
Oh, good. Because we got some... Sorry to
ramble. No, carry on.
We got some very alarming emails from listeners.
Oh, really?
People who'd had similar elbow problems. We got a lot of medical advice, a lot of doctors actually offering you bits of text describing how you should operate on yourself.
Well, they were assuming that it was some form of bursitis or something.
That's right, and how to burst and drain it.
The bursa. And it wasn't like that. It wasn't purulent in that way. It wasn't weeping or seeping. It was just kind of painful and swollen. Yeah. But then I went to the sort of A&E, like the local medi-centre, when I got back on Saturday last week after the show, because I was in absolute agony. Mm. And I went there, I booked myself an appointment, and I actually thought it was the doctor. I thought it was the local doc, right?
Right.
I turn up and it's more like the Medi-Center, and it's really full Saturday night. Loads of people, their families, little kids and stuff. And it was the one time in my life when I did not want to be recognized, right? Which doesn't happen to me very often. But sure enough, as soon as I go in there, this guy goes, "Oh, hello. Look who it is."
Was this the doctor saying that?
No, this
the receptionist.
Wasn't the doctor. This was a guy waiting to
a
have
patient.
He had a problem with his eye.
To have his brain removed.
He's like, "What are you doing here?" No, he was a nice chap. "What are you doing here?" I was like, "Well, I'm in agonizing pain and I'm feeling really ill. Thanks. What are you doing?" "Oh, I've got something in my eye." "So, oh, weird to see you here. I was just checking out some of your stuff on the internet. Crystal Maze." I didn't want to go into the fact that that was Joe that did that one. Mm. But although I did help with the voices. And so I said, "Oh, yeah, great. That's really great." So, "Weird. Weird to have you sat here. A celebrity, sort of."
He said, "Sort of."
Sort
yep,
of.
Correct.
Meanwhile, everyone in the waiting room was like watching this little scene unfold and sort of thinking, "Who's that guy talking to? Who's the guy with the beard? He's not famous." It was really awful. So, and then I said to him, like, "How long have you been waiting here?" He's like, "Oh, about an hour now. My appointment was about an hour ago." "An hour? I'm not going to wait an hour and make small talk with my agonizing pain." So I just peeled off. Couldn't be bothered with it.
Really?
Yeah. I thought, I don't care. Life's too short. I can go home and be in pain in bed rather than sat here in the
medicine. But you didn't get your elbow treated.
No, because I thought, what are they going to say? They're going to go, "Well, you know, you just got a big elbow. It'll go down. Get
and,
over
and
it."
And it has gone down.
And it has, yeah.
Wow.
So I correctly diagnosed myself. I went straight home to bed.
How serious would the injury have to be before you stop being repelled by celebrity recognition? Do you know what I mean?
I think there would have to be an open gash there.
Right.
That actually needed sewing up by a professional.
Something that would get you rushed through the waiting room.
I mean, even an open gash, at that moment, even an open gash, I would have gone home and done it myself.
Yeah, stuck a little band-aid on it.
Self-surgery.
Yeah, a little groovy break. Now back to work.
Now, it's a lovely sunny day outside, and it's been nice all week, in fact.
Nice.
Sometimes, right, in September, you get, like, the nicest weather of the whole year.
That is true.
Because it's nice, it's like sunny, right? But it's also not too hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you don't get uncomfortable.
I've said this before, right?
Yeah, say it again.
Summer in Britain is at the beginning and end, not in the middle.
Right.
You know? It's always bad in the middle. But
do you know what I mean? It's hot at the beginning of the summer, and there's always rubbish
in the middle, and then it gets hot again at the end.
And it gets nice again at the end.
It's always the same.
But the thing I noticed this week, walking around London town, I was here for a couple of days doing a little bit of work, you know, how it goes.
Exciting for you.
Very exciting.
Did you get confused and overwhelmed?
Yeah, I started crying. I was like the guy from Alone in the Wild. We'll talk about that later on. But I noticed a lot of people sitting outside restaurants.
Oh, God!
On tables on the pavement.
Why do they do that?
Why? I'm asking you. Why do they do that? Because they're sitting outside in the pavement in England at the end of September. And it just seems to be like a colossal act of denial to me. Mm. You know what I mean?
Well, it's becoming a European style
it's
city.
It's not a European style city.
It is. Everyone's cycling.
Please.
It's very relaxed now.
European style. It's by no means European style. You've got a great big ugly street like Oxford Street or whatever, and there's still people sitting outside.
Disagree. I think it's lovely.
You're insane. Have you ever sat outside in a?
I know what you mean when the pavement's very narrow, and
when
the traffic's
narrow.
Very close. And when there are loonies coming and asking you for money.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm sitting eating at a table, I always think that someone will walk past. And in fact, I'm vaguely tempted to do this when I'm walking past someone's table. It'd be an awful thing to do and I'd never do it. But just to put your fist in their chips. Do you know what I mean? You're just strolling past. They've got a bowl of chips. You go, bong, fist in the chips. Punch the chips. Boom.
Fist in chips.
Yeah, or something like that. Or I don't know, or just knock their drink over and run away. Do you know what I mean? There just seems to be a sort of very fragile sense of an unspoken sense of trust having a very fancy meal, especially when it's one of those restaurants when there's a tablecloth and roses and it's as if they're in a room.
That's
you're not in a room, mate. You're in the street.
That's the
Bosch
thing I think. Like, you're just walking by and there's dog pops and strewn around and stuff.
I agree.
And bins overflowing.
But I think the general idea is wonderful.
Of course
I think
the
it's brilliant.
Idea is wonderful. Yeah. But it's a world away from being on Sunset
it works
Boulevard
in most
as the
of
sun
London.
Goes down.
Sunset
you know.
Boulevard's horrible as well. There are lots of outdoor restaurants on Sunset Boulevard, and that's really trafficy.
But some of them have little white fences around them and stuff.
Yeah,
like that,
but know? That's just as bad there.
I agree. It's a little bit. I don't agree.
You don't agree?
No, I started off agreeing. Now I don't agree.
Complete switcheroo.
I don't put my fist in the chips, though.
You don't. Well, no, neither do I. But I'm tempted to. What else? I don't know. You often get hassled by people asking for money, though, don't you?
Right.
Don't you? It's certainly in Soho if you're sitting out.
I don't know. I've never sat out. I've never been tempted. To me, it seems insane. Right, like, here's some other things you could have, right? The same kind of things. Mm. Like, what about a shower in a supermarket?
Yes, a shower in a soup. Well, where's the through line there? How is that like eating on the pavement? Oh, I see. Well, it is a bit, isn't it? Because to you, the incongruity of pavements and eating. Right,
exactly.
Okay, I get it.
What about a bed on a tube train?
Yeah. I mean, this could go on forever, couldn't
it? What about a cocktail bar in a public toilet? How about that? You want to hang out there?
Yeah.
Fist and chips? What about a swimming pool in a cinema?
Oh, for God's sake. It's too
broad. Or a gym in a restaurant.
It's too... The parameters aren't strict enough.
How about a gymnasium right there in the restaurant? What do you mean the parameters aren't strict?
It's just too floppy and broad. Yeah. You want to tighten the terms up a bit.
Really?
Then it'll be more impressive, comically.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about.
Last week's Text the Nation subject was all about TV presenting annoyances.
Mm-hmm.
TV presenters, techniques or mannerisms that really get on your wick. And we got some furious correspondence, didn't we?
People feel very passionately about it. It's something that everyone takes very seriously.
And I was worried after last week's show that we'd maybe, you know, been reading out some quite personal insults to other castle presenters.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they weren't our opinions. They were the opinions of our listeners. But people getting really incensed about the minutiae of particular presenters' movements and mannerisms.
Was it Shan Lloyd? She came in for some fairly harsh criticism.
Came in for a lot of kicking.
It was very personal criticism.
The bald MasterChef presenter seems to be one of the most irritating figures in the public sphere at the moment, wouldn't you say?
Have you got a few messages there from listeners?
We've got more, yes. Here's one from George Humphreys. He says, it really bothers me when people sit too close together on TV. This is best exemplified on the programme This Week, hosted by Andrew Neil. The regular guests, Diane Abbott and Michael Portillo, sit far too close together. It boggles my mind. Why not get a bigger couch? Surely they feel uncomfortable so close to each other's special zones. I imagine that TV presenting is a sweaty business, so sitting with at least 25% of your body area touching is nothing short of madness. So he's getting annoyed by physical proximity on the television.
Yeah.
He must spend a lot of his life very angry.
I know what he means about Diane Abbott and Michael Portillo, though. They do. I've noticed that. And but they have a kind of sexual chemistry anyway, though.
They do.
A very special sexual chemistry.
Well, that's a sexy programme.
They're reaching very across laid to back. Each other from across the political boundaries.
Spectrum.
Michael from the right, Diane from the left.
Mm.
And it's a beautiful meeting of minds in the middle and bodies as well.
Mm.
It's very sexy. Here's one from Scott. He says, on Bargain Hunt, Cash in the Attic, etc., the presenters and experts, such as Wannacott, Dickinson and Martin, always feel they have to make idiotic puns that relate to the item up for auction. For example, a porcelain figure of a horse would get, let's hope it gallops away at auction.
Yeah.
If that's not enough, they're constantly forcing the member of the public to disclose what they plan to do with the money. Surely that's none of their business. There's not a lot you can spend £40 on. It's just an excuse to get a final pun to end the segment. Well, the porcelain horse has ended up in pastures new, and I'm sure the £40 will help towards that trip to Australia to visit your dead father. That's all from us here at the Auction Rooms in Chiswick. That was from Scott. Thank you very much, Scott.
That's well observed. That is very annoying.
I mean, if you remove puns from the media, though, the whole infrastructure will come tumbling down.
Plus, you've got to have some sympathy for those people. They do a one-hour show every day, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
From different rubbish tips. So where does it come from?
Places in the UK.
Places in the UK. Sorry, but it's like, isn't that the one that comes from, like, Jumble Sales or something?
Fist and Chips.
Fist and Chips. Anyway, I've got sympathy. They look so sort of tired and lost.
I agree.
And they've been doing it for 15 years every day.
Job, yeah.
Awful job. That's one of my tongues being sucked back into my toothless lizard mouth. Here's another one from Nikki in London. I'm sorry, but David Attenborough's nature documentaries drive me insane
what?
With their obviously created by a Foley artist sounds and manipulative music.
No.
Look, oh wow, no really, oh wow, this is amazing, a polar bear, and listen, he's crunching custard inside a pair of rubber gloves.
that's
from Simon Corrigan. I've got two names at the end of that. It's either from Simon Corrigan or Nikki in London. But he or she is annoyed by these sound effects.
That's a very bold claim. I don't believe the BBC would fake up sound effects on a nature dog.
Oh, of course they do.
Attenborough,
of course
he wouldn't
they
do that. No
they've
way.
Got enough trouble getting the picture without
you
the
are
sound.
An, if they did that, they would have to put. They would have to
no,
say some sound effects
come on.
Created by a Foley artist.
You're in the biz, right? If you want to get a polar bear, you don't get close with the camera. You stick it on a long lens.
Get a directional mic.
Yeah, but not at that distance in polar land when it's windy.
They got good mics these days.
Pick up lovely, clean crunching, do you think?
Or you get a tame bear in afterwards to do it, maybe. But you don't fake up sounds of nature.
It's not faking.
It's not.
It's just making. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any.
One thing I do notice, though, is sometimes when you've got black and white footage on documentaries, especially of the war, bombs dropping, that kind of thing, which was clearly silent footage, right?
Yeah.
Then they put, like, mad explosions and
exactly.
stuff and all that sort of stuff.
It's par for the course.
Ridiculous.
Of course Attenborough
does. But
not
Attenborough.
Yeah, he does.
No, none.
Listeners, support me on this.
Support me on this. Dickie, get in touch. And Richard.
Here's one from Luke in Manchester.
David is what I mean.
Although there are many annoying things about The X Factor, one thing infuriates me beyond reason. In this new series, they have the auditionees sing to a backing track and insist on cutting to a shot of a faceless sound engineer pushing up a fader before the start of each song, as if the audience's brains would incinerate at not knowing where this magical Muzak wonder was emanating. The only way me and my girlfriend can bear it is by sarcastically miming the action as it happens to diffuse the rage. We should probably just stop watching it, Luke, in Manchester.
Yeah,
have you noticed that?
Definitely, yeah.
Do you know what that is, I think? It's like a cue to place your bets.
Because
you never know whether they're going to be awful or brilliant at that point. And that's the kind of visual clue to say, oh, it's going to be brilliant, it's going to be awful.
I know what they mean, though. It is a bit ridiculous, just pressing the play button. But it's a nice visual cue. Mm. I've changed my mind. It's not ridiculous. It's brilliant. It's one of my favourite bits of the programme.
You're impossible to pin down.
I know, I am.
Oh, here's another one. Miss Fiona Bruce, who we love.
Well, yeah.
So this is in our opinion. We love you, Fiona. Miss Fiona Bruce, you want to what?
Have an affair. I was going to say have an affair with her. But
with her?
Yeah.
Really?
So do I.
Do you?
Yeah.
Let's not get into
no,
this.
No, I'll do Tuesdays. I can do any days. She's free.
Miss Fiona Bruce seems to have a habit on the news of sitting at the desk with her arms positioned in such a way that she is impersonating a Romulan from Star Trek The Next Generation. It appears that she is wearing a mildly irritating deodorant. Robert from Dumfriesshire. Now, you know about Romulans. You like Star Trek. Is that right?
You know about Romulans.
I picked that one out specifically
because
like Star Trek
Next
Trek
Generation.
Knowledge.
They don't have... There's not that much Romulan action in the Next Generation.
Do you think that's a fair point?
It's more Borg-based.
Do you think that's a fair point, though?
I don't know! I know more about the Borg. If they talked about that, I could comment. Romulans, I'm not fast.
All right. Adam and Joe. Adam and Joe. Adam and Joe. The podcast. Adam and Joe. Hi, Adam and Joe. A friend of mine is a dubbing artist. He said that all the sounds we hear on nature programmes aren't authentic. They come from a data bank of pre-recorded sounds. Karen from Bristol. Sam in Edinburgh. I'm sorry, Adam, but a great deal, if not most of the sound effects on Nature Docs are done by a Foley artist. My soul withered a little when I found this out, but I got over it. Russell in Brighton. I remember a whole programme years ago on a woman whose job was to make the sounds for nature features. A lot of knives and cabbages, I recall.
But you...
Yeah, I'm afraid you are wrong. Here's someone. Do definitely create sounds for nature programmes, including Attenborough. There have been documentaries about it on the DVDs. How else do you think they got a time-lapsed growing bramble to creak on the plant series? it's easy to get a time-lapsed growing bramble to creak. The end of this text is... How else do you think they got a time-lapsed growing bramble to creak on the plant series, Adam? Return to schooling! Exclamation mark.
I am naive. Certainly, I certainly am naive. But I just assumed that in the modern climate of transparency and accountability, that you wouldn't be allowed to
but
get
there
away
was a
with
big,
things
there
like
was
that.
A big fuss about them intercutting like a wide shot of a real squirrel with a close-up of a squirrel.
I know nature
studio.
Documentaries are to some extent a tissue of lies, but I assumed that nowadays you had to like be completely transparent about it and have like Bear Grylls does
yeah,
at the beginning
completely.
Of the program. Well, this is the thing. Is it completely
if
or
it
not
was completely,
completely
transparent, all nature programs would have to be live.
I'm an advocate. I liked it in the old days when everyone would lie through their teeth about everything on TV. I thought that was much more fun. I didn't care about knowing the truth. I didn't want to know the absolute truth about everything and competitions and all that rubbish. But now, in the modern climate of having to be totally 100% honest about the way everything is done in a tedious way, I can't believe that they are getting fake creaks on time-lapse growing brambles.
Text the nation. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text!
Now, I'm a small man, listeners, a small, hairy, angry man, and I tend to get into confrontations with authority on a fairly regular basis. I've spoken before on this program about confrontations that I've had with parking wardens. Anyway, over the summer, right, I was doing a little bit of work at Teddington Studios, beautiful Teddington, and I would cycle there every morning, and right at the end of my cycle, I'd go across Richmond Park. There was a little bridge to get across the river to get to Teddington Studios, right? And it was a pedestrian footbridge thing. And basically, it was clear that if there were other people walking on the footbridge, the best thing to do would not be to cycle across it, right? Because it was fairly narrow. So if there were people on this footbridge, I would always get off my bike and wheel it across. But then one morning I arrived at the footbridge, no one on the footbridge, right? And I was pretty late as well. So I just cruised right across. Right at the end of the footbridge, a couple was just starting to walk onto the bridge. So I slowed right down, like absolutely slow.
How wide is this bridge?
I would say...
How wide is this bridge?
How wide is that? Like a meter, 2 meters, something like that?
1.5 meters, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's decent. You've got like passing...
Room for a bike and a couple to pass without any friction.
Well, no, you'd have to... I mean, I would say...
You'd have to give way.
You'd have to give way, yeah. Mm. So anyway, so I slowed right down and I kind of pulled over to one side to let the couple pass. And then I carried on down. And there was a young community police officer at the other end, right? And he's got all his gear on and he's got his mirror shades on. And he's absolutely loving being a community police officer. And he's on his bike as well. So he holds up his hand. Stop, please, sir. And he must have been about, I mean, he was young, you know, he was like about 27 something. He goes, stop, please. Any idea why I stopped you, sir? That old chestnut, you know, and you're like, oh, here we go. I can't believe it. So I was like, no. Any idea at all why I might have stopped you there? And it's like, I said, could you tell me why you stopped me?
They should be stopped from starting conversations like that, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
Because it infers it's such a patronizing place to start a conversation from.
It's absolutely infuriating. And I said, listen, I'm really sorry. I'm in a hurry. Could you please tell me what I did wrong? He said, right, step off your bike, please, sir. And it's like, he's deliberately like, he knows I'm in a hurry. He can see I'm frustrated. He's deliberately like slowing everything down, making it as maddening as possible. So I get off my bike. I'm like, okay, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry if I'm like a little jittery. I'm really late. I really want to go. Could you just please tell me what I did wrong? I can avoid doing it again in the future, is what I said, right? So this guy says, got any ID on you, please, sir? Oh, my goodness. So I get out my ID. I'm like, can you please tell me what I did wrong?
Have you got a giant beard at this stage?
Not giant, like a normal beard.
Normal one, cool.
Yeah. And he's still wearing his mirror shades. I said, can you take your sunglasses off, please? So he takes his sunglasses off, right? And he's looking at me. He's like, right, so shall I tell you why I stopped you? I was like, yes, please. That would be great. You were cycling on the footbridge there, sir. I was like, yeah, I was cycling on the footbridge. What's the problem? He said, there's no cycling on the footbridge. I was like, right, but all right, I won't do it again. He's like, did you see the couple there, sir? And I was like, yeah, I did. They were right at the end. Like, well, you made no attempt to get off your bike when you were cycling across the footbridge. I was like, no, because there was no one on the footbridge. There was no one there, so I was not endangering anyone. Yeah, you made no attempt to get off your bike. I know, I just said I made no attempt to get off my bike because there was no one on the footbridge. Cut a long story short, he gives me a ticket.
30 quid. Is it a £30 fine?
£30 on the spot fine.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I said, do you give like tickets to every single person you see on a bike? Because you see loads of people cycling on this footbridge, right? Even when there's a lot of people on there. I said, do you ticket every single person you see on a bike? He said, no, I use my discretion. Well, why don't you use your discretion now for someone who cycled across the footbridge with no one on the footbridge? I wasn't saying it like that.
You were thinking that.
But I was thinking that. I wanted to throttle him. And I was thinking, I'm just going to get on my bike and cycle away. And there's going to be a bike chase. And I was thinking, I would cycle off and I'd get into work and there would be this
community.
And
it would end up in a film studio like classic bike chases.
That's
and you'd
right.
be weaving between people in costumes carrying big props. That would be ace.
And I was thinking, could I lose the community police officer if I'm on my bike? And then I just thought, no, life's too short.
It would escalate into a huge international manhunt.
I just couldn't believe. I said, you are a disgrace.
So this is the subject of Text the Nation is...
Run-ins you've had with
petty officialdom.
Petty officialdom and authority of that kind. I had a similar thing on a train, which I'll tell you about.
We're talking about security guards in shops, community police support officers, real policemen. Could we talk about that?
Sure, anyone in a position of authority.
Infuriating run-ins with petty officialdom.
Yeah.
I had a very similar thing along the embankment on my bike with two community police support officers cycling along a totally empty pavement. And they pulled over in their van and told me to get off the bike.
Yeah.
I wasn't in the way of anybody. And it was by a very dangerous main road. And so I said to them, I said, God, this is really stupid and a waste of your time.
How did they respond?
They looked angry. They looked as if they're about to ticket me. And then I said, how much is the fine? Is it £10? Because I've been thinking about it for a while. I thought I'd just pay it. You know, I'd almost pay £10 for the pleasure of being able to cycle, for, you know, like a ticket to cycle on the pavement.
Yeah.
It's like only £2 more than the congestion charge. They looked as if they were going to bust me, but then I backpedaled and went, but, you know, you're only following the rules and I'm breaking them, so that's fine.
I tried that. I tried to squirm out of my fine, but this guy was absolutely, you know, he decided that Buckley's needed a ticket. Here's a letter from a listener. This is from Simon Nichols. He's 21, he's male, and he's from Hemel Hempstead. Dear Adam and Joe, I'm a massive fan of the show. I work Saturdays, so I've never been part of Black Squadron, I'm afraid, but I do love the podcast. One of my favourite times to listen to your podcast is when I'm in the bath. I often tell my parents I'm going for my Adam and Joe bath. I put my laptop on the other side of the bathroom and leave a podcast on while I have a nice wash, and then I towel up and shuffle back to my room to finish listening. So this week, I was sitting on my bed, having just returned to my room, and I was listening to the podcast when I spied a Whisper Gold on my table. And then he says in brackets, other chocolate bars are available.
So
he's doing
Whisper Gold.
He's doing the work for us there. Thank you for that. I had just started eating the chocolate when there was a knock at the door. I froze. Suddenly, I realised I was completely naked, eating chocolate, listening to Adam and Joe. My mum, having no concept of the point of knocking, threw open the door and stepped in. You can imagine the embarrassment that ensued. Me sat in front of a laptop, listening to Adam and Joe with a half-eaten choc bar in my hand, eyes like a rabbit caught in the headlights. She simply gasped at my nudity and turned around. As she left the room, I shouted after her, "That's right, Mum! This is what I do now!" I'm not entirely sure why. We laughed about it later. Thanks much, Sam Nichols. Thanks a lot for that. I just thought I'd read that out as a nice little image portrait.
That's got a couple of curious things about that. How old is that man?
21.
21. Your mum seeing you naked at 21? Is that slightly odd?
Yeah, very odd.
When was the last time your mum saw you naked?
Well, not for a very long time.
Do you think there should be a National Nude Day?
No.
You don't think so? You don't think it would clear up a lot of mysteries?
Oh, no. Those are the mysteries I don't want.
Come to work nude?
No, thanks.
Do you think? Why not? Are you afraid of something?
No,
Have you got something to hide?
What?
Saggy Botox?
Yes, of course.
Man breasts.
Obviously,
like
I've got something
bottles.
To hide. I don't want to walk around nude. If I was some kind of Adonis, not like Lord Adonis, who cruelly is rather an unattractive man, but I...
You should go on Mock the Week.
I would be. You know, if I was sexy, of course I'd walk around nude.
The other thing is that's an ambitious bath. Laptop in the bath?
No, he made a point of saying he puts it at the other end of the bathroom.
I was talking to someone on the phone, and he was on the phone in the bath with his laptop in the bath.
What?
That's ambitious,
that's
isn't
irresponsible.
It? It got me thinking, what's the most ambitious you've ever been with a bath?
Ambitious.
Do you know what I mean in terms of stuff to do in there?
Well, like put a little mini Hadron Collider in there.
Something. Other than wash.
Oh, what's the most ambitious? That's a good question.
Trying to multitask in the bath.
Sure.
I've never used my laptop in the bath. I'd be terrified that the steam would...
Idiot hole if you
break it, yeah, but people do.
That's moronic.
Anyway, just what...
Interesting question, though. Things you've done in multitasking in the bath. We'd love to hear your thoughts, listeners.
What a nice bit of cake now. Yo, what a cake, what a nice bit of cake. Nice little bit of cake.
I was ranting earlier on about how I don't think there's any reason to have a meal on the pavement outside a restaurant, and I was speculating that it would be absurd to have a cocktail bar in a public toilet. Someone's emailed and said there is one up in sort of Hoxton area, but I don't think it's a fully functioning public toilet. I think it used to be a public toilet. They've converted into a bar. There's a similar thing. There's a comedy club in Shepherd's Bush that's similar to that, I think. But you can't have like weeing and cocktail shaking going on in close proximity.
Well, but then our producer James pointed out that bars in pools, in swimming pools,
oh yeah,
there's probably a lot of that goes on.
No, but it's if it does happen, what you think people are sat there in the pool bar?
Well, we were saying that when I was young, the idea of a bar in a swimming pool seemed to me like the height of sophistication.
Certainly.
And luxury.
Yeah,
and amazing to be able.
And
to
it is. I've been one on my honeymoon. I've been in one.
But then
it was amazing.
You could imagine that. I mean, James, our producer, was talking about one he went to, and there was a man sitting there, sort of propping up the bar, so to speak, and he'd been there a long time.
He was just a drunkie man.
He was drinking a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it would be very easy just to let one.
Certainly the temptation is not to get out of the pool and go to the lab.
If the water's a little bit warmer around the bar, I'd use the indoor one. But we were asking about ambitious baths, stuff you've tried to do in the bath, you know, just to make it a bit more interesting. Here's an email from Vicky Fabry in London. My boyfriend, early on in the relationship, I was being moody, so when I arrived at his house, he said, let's have a bath, a fairly usual Saturday night activity for both of us that usually involves the weekend papers.
Special bath.
And they got a big bath, or do you think they just cram in together?
Yeah, I mean, that is, in our bath, that would not be a good idea.
In a conventional bath. Anyway, when I went up to the bathroom, however, I found the laptop, my projector, and a bedsheet held vertically taut on two poles.
Whoa.
So that we could watch a movie in the bath. I'm a big film fan. He generally hates them. This is already a pretty good feat in itself and an unusually romantic gesture for him. But on top of that, the bath didn't stay warm for long and we ran out of hot water. So my boyfriend got... No, it's not what you think. So my boyfriend got the camping stove, heated the camping kettle next to the bath and topped it up whilst simultaneously watching the film.
He's the best boyfriend in the world.
That's pretty incredible, isn't it?
And there was probably popcorn floating on the surface of the water.
Do you think
that
would be nice, though, after about half an hour?
No. It would be awful, wouldn't it?
Start being kind of horrible.
Surely, because you get pruny and also you just feel weird, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think half an hour is probably tops for a bath, isn't it?
Definitely. Watch some cartoons or something. Minutes. But committing to setting up a whole film with a projector and everything.
It was HiMat as well.
It was Showa. They were watching it in the bath.
Here's another one about
and
ambitious
they were
baths.
It in the bath.
From Jimmy in Glasgow. 'Twas in my lazy student days, and I was spending a Sunday afternoon relaxing in the bath. But relaxing meant taking the radio in so that I could listen to that afternoon's football match, as well as the TV so I could watch one of those generic results programs to keep up to date with all matches. And as it was Saturday afternoon listening to football, I had a few beers and smoked a few fags. In the bath. Is that classy? And we should remind younger listeners, it's very dangerous to bring electrical appliances that are connected to the mains into the bathroom.
Obviously. I mean, that is absolutely lethal.
But that's a pretty impressive bath there for James.
To say nothing of drinking and smoking, which is also extremely bad for you.
Disgusting.
And we would never encourage it here at the castle.
Hi, this is a sexy woman, and you're listening to the highlights of the Adam and Joe BBC Six Music show. Ooh, this podcast has got me so hot. I'm too hot. I'm going to have to sit down and take off my cardigan. Ooh, I'm boiling.
What are we doing here? Oh, yeah,
we're going to talk about our competition listeners. If you were listening...
Our non-petition.
Yeah, if you were listening to the show last week, you might have heard us announce an extraordinarily exciting competition that climaxes at the Electric Proms that are happening here in London next month. And we announced last week a competition and the prize of which was for you to join us on stage at the Electric Proms.
And it's a kind of a karaoke thing. Basically, what we wanted you to do is send in little audition tapes of yourselves singing along to a couple of our Song Wars songs. We've uploaded instrumental versions of Joe's Quantum of Solace song and my Nutty Room song on our blog, and the lyrics are there and everything. So all you have to do is sing over the backing track, video yourself doing it, send us a link to the site.
Yeah.
And you could be in the running to join us at the Electric Prom.
What could be simpler? But listen to what happened, listeners. So we launched this last Saturday. Yesterday, Adam and I got emails from our producer. Nothing.
Nothing.
Not a single entry. Over the 6 days that have elapsed, not one person in the British Isles has decided to film themselves karaokeing our Song Wars and send it in. But before you think, well, that's no surprise, you two are a couple of idiot holes, and what kind of idiot hole would enter your idiotic
show anyway, you jerks.
We had a far more creative competition last year, was it? Our Video Wars competition, where listeners had to actually make a video for our Song Wars songs. And we got... Well, hundreds would be a lie, but over 100 entries for that.
Yeah.
So we know we do have very creative and inventive listeners. So we're trying to figure out what's gone wrong with this competition. What have we done wrong?
Joe's theory was that maybe people that listen to this show and feel moved to get in touch with us are not sufficient. They're not like exhibitionists people. They're not like that. That came out wrong.
Yeah.
But they're not like X Factor type people. You know, they're not like song and dance maestros.
Yeah. I mean, I feel for them. I'm not a big fan of public performance either. I like being on the radio, you know, where I just imagine no one's listening. But the idea of getting up in front of an audience and performing terrifies me as well. And I think maybe a lot of our listeners are artistic types who like to, you know, go back into their burrows and
express
privately
themselves in other media.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than bare themselves.
That's problem number one. Snag number two, this event happens during the day on a weekday.
Do you really think that would have put people off?
Yeah, because if you're at school or if you have a job,
right,
or you don't live in London, you cannot participate.
I see.
Were you to win.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's less motivation.
Right.
Right? So those two things combined. And is it complicated for people to video things and upload it to sites? No.
No, it's very
easy. That's
these
easy
days.
So that's not the problem.
No. Here's one thing, right? One incentive. Look at it this way.
Mm.
It's at the moment very easy to win this competition.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's an open goal. No one else is even playing.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is carry the ball over to the goal and set it down, and you've scored.
You've scored. You get to hang out with us in the whole afternoon. We're going to have this fun party at the Electric Proms. Don't laugh like that. It's going to be... I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it as well. I was just wondering how exciting that would be for people to hang out with us.
Wow.
In a fun party. No, but it will be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm going to try and cash in my Nectar points. I don't know
the
if
the points party.
I think I'm going to try and do the points party.
I think there's a lot of interest in the event.
Yeah.
There are people that want to turn up to spectate. But in terms of people who actually want to perform a Song Wars song, zero, nothing, nil.
We're going to do a little show. Joe and myself are going to sing some of our Song Wars songs.
We?
Yeah, I'm committing to that.
All right.
I'm definitely going to do that. You can back out. But it's going to be fun. So come on, folks, don't be shy.
I'm probably going to be away the
are
week
you?
Before.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to have just like landed
you can
in
MC.
A plane the day before. No, I'll sing maybe Dr. Sexy.
Sing Dr. Sexy. We'll bring some videos along. It'll be fun. We're going to have a fun time. So
and don't be scared. If you're a shy listener, don't be scared. We'll be very supportive. We'll sing with you.
Mm.
We'll help you to the loo and up onto the stage.
Exactly.
We'll spoon feed you baby food and stuff.
So go to our blog right now, bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe, and find out more. All the details are up there. Everything you need to get involved. Don't be shy. It's going to be fun.
Adam and Joe.
Naughty.
My nipples.
Joe, did you see the conclusion of Alone in the Wild on Channel 4?
I didn't. I've seen none of it.
And we were talking about this 3 weeks ago when the series kicked off. I was under the impression that it was going to be like a 6-part series. I mean, that's normal.
How many parts was it?
3.
Yeah, there's a lot of 3-parters.
Is there?
The choir was 3 parts.
Right.
As well. The choir, Unsung Town.
Uh-huh.
Which I've been enjoying, but yeah.
And
anyway.
What's the deal, do you think? They get halfway. Do you think they're shooting for a series, but they haven't got enough stuff?
They just don't want to commit. They don't want to commit. 6 is a big commitment. If it's a flop, then they're stuck with it. Do you know what I mean? They have to move it around the schedules. Just cowardliness.
Cowardliness.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think the deal with Alone in the Wild, though, was surely... I mean, I might be totally wrong. I don't know about this, but... Surely they were shooting for a longer series, like a 6-parter or something, hoping that they would get a lot out of this guy.
And then he pressed the emergency button.
Ed, yeah. But by program 3, it was just wall-to-wall sobbing. Mm. I mean, I had a point to make anyway about the amount of crying from men on television, which is getting way out of hand. Did you see on Thin Ice, like before we went off for our break, Ben Vogel and James Cracknell, and the show was called On Thin Ice... And
yes. Was Fogel himself crying?
Yeah, everyone was crying.
Yeah, yeah.
Fogel did a lot of crying.
Well, Fogel does really push himself. He was seriously ill at one stage, wasn't he?
He got frostbite on his nose.
No, but he was properly seriously ill. He had some weird wasting virus or bug that he caught
in
the jungle. Yeah, do you remember? I think it was pretty serious.
Oh, dear.
So he's very vulnerable generally.
He is. He shouldn't go out into the Arctic then.
He loves it, though.
He absolutely loves pushing himself. Or does he? Because he spends most of his time sobbing. Like, it doesn't take much to set him off. But on Thin Ice, Ben Fogel was very worried about... He got frostbite on his nose, right? I'm really worried about my nose. I can't stop thinking about my nose. I'm so worried about my nose. Cut to Fogel with massive bandage over his nose.
Over nose.
Yeah. And then, like, long shots of... he would get upset because Cracknell was a bit of a bully. He would bully the other random guy.
Cracknell? Sarah Cracknell?
No, not Sarah. James. I don't. Is he a rower? James Cracknell, something like some sports figure. They got him out there. And there's all these people going out into the wilderness, into the extremes, you know, generally men, young men in their 30s or 40s. And it's hard to tell why they're doing it. I think there was some charity connection with Vogel on Thin Ice. I'm not sure about that. There's absolutely no question of it being a charitable adventure or venture for
Alone
in the Wild.
Was this a castle production?
On Thin Ice, I think, was a Big British Castle thing. Alone in the Wild was Channel 4.
Right.
And there was no question about it being charity. It was just about this guy pushing himself, testing himself. Ed, he was called. And he went out there to British Columbia, I think.
Crying's fun, though. It's good for men to cry.
But he was crying nonstop. Literally nonstop throughout the whole...
Really?
Literally, by the third program, all they had left, presumably, to make this show was footage of the guy sobbing.
When was the last time you cried?
I was close to it last weekend when...
With the elbow.
With my elbow really hurting. But I didn't. I didn't actually sob.
I cry when I watch the choir Unsung Town every week. Like a little baby.
Right.
Because it's so moving.
Yeah.
The sound of, like... Do you ever see that, James, the producer? Wonder if any listeners watch that program with Gareth. He's brilliant. And he's got this whole... what's it called? South Oxley. He's got this whole town doing a choir.
Uh-huh.
And there's something terribly moving about different people from different walks of life. It's a bit like the Retro Text the Nation jingle.
Sure it is.
Different people of different ages, children, old people, black, white, yellow, all singing in a beautiful noise.
Inspiring stuff.
Really inspiring.
You know what? I was close
to
tears.
And it's a real weepy. They've got it. They've really nailed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just it's a sort of classy X factor in that everyone's got a story and then everything is... You know, the singing is hugely cathartic and everyone sobs.
And it's finished now, is it?
It just did the third one. Yeah, well, we watched it recorded, so it was out on Tuesday nights. I think last week they did the last one.
Ah.
Very powerful. But I cry happily. I love it.
Do you?
My face really contorts. I like trying to hold it in. The bottom lip goes.
Do your throat hurt?
I spasm. Yes, very painful throat, yeah. But then I love it when it finally gushes out.
Wow, you let it gush out.
I do.
Do you make sounds?
No, because I'm usually sitting behind
do you cover
my
your face?
Girlfriend and I don't want her to know.
Oh, sure you don't.
Because she's on the floor, I'm on the sofa. I don't want her to know. Oh, it's quite good, wasn't it? stupid program, stupid program. very soppy program. Do you want a biscuit? Oh, God. Oh, Gareth.
Do you cover your face when you cry?
Not unless she looks.
Ed Wardle was not covering his face at all. And when he was alone in the wild, he was in the Canadian wilderness there and everything was setting him off. Mm. I mean, he was physically at the end of his tether, right? He'd been out there for 50 days. He was very hungry. He's malnourished. So I'm not saying he had nothing to cry about, even though he was out there for no good reason. But he was absolutely sobbing. And then he got letters, that thing they do on I'm a
they
Celebrity.
They always
get me
do
out
that,
here.
Yes. Yeah. Letters from your family.
Had some letters.
They do that on, sorry to keep steamrolling you, they do that on that Channel 4 thing.
Yeah.
Shipwrecked.
That sets them off every time.
It really does. They have to hand them to a friend to read.
Picture of the girlfriend.
Picture of my girlfriend.
Dear Suki,
he shows
we
the picture.
Are missing you so much at home. Tommy made his breakfast and said, where's Suki? I can't read it. You read it.
And then he goes at the end, they'd slipped a picture in that he didn't expect. Picture it like a picture of himself as a little boy with his mum.
I didn't expect this one. It's a picture of my mum. Yes.
Sometimes on Shipwrecked, the person's only got to the island the day before when the letter comes. And they still break down.
Yeah.
I mean, letters from mummy are very powerful anyway.
Sure.
Handwritten letters from mummy and daddy.
But he couldn't stop crying. And then eventually, when he pressed the emergency button and they airlifted him out of there, he called time on the whole project.
Mm.
And then cut to him filming himself in this little hotel room, crying. Crying in the hotel.
I'm sat in the hotel room.
Do you think we could do that? Say I'm...
Looking at a chair. This is pointlessness at the telly. I'm eating a chocolate bar. I've just come from the most beautiful place in the world. What's the point of it all?
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Here's a text we had from Carl with an E. How would you say that, Carl with an E? K-A.
Carle.
Carle. When at school, aged 15, the police saw me cycle on the pavement going home for lunch. They flashed their lights. I ignored them. On the return journey, I was doing the same when the same police car went past. Rather than immediately stop, they continued past and into school. They were chasing him at this point. They drove over four pitches to cut me off at the pass.
No way.
I dumped my bike and they chased me into school and read me the riot act. All a bit over the top, considering said path is now a cycle path after the road was deemed too dangerous to cycle on. I was a hero for a day and actually was clapped by 1,500 school children who had chased the car through the school. Observations on how dangerous the police car was at 30 miles an hour in the middle of the school fell on deaf ears. From Carl.
That's like a scene from a Spielberg film.
That's
or something.
That's insane, isn't it?
That's fantastic.
Carly is a dude. Here's one from Mr. Kidney in Glasgow.
He's not. Is he a mega dude, do you think?
He's, well, no, he would have said he was if he was a mega dude.
Maybe he's just modest. I bet he is a mega dude.
I was given a £50 fine by the litter enforcers in Glasgow when my three-year-old son dropped some crisps on the pavement. By the time they'd finished writing the fine and given me a lecture on parenting, some pigeons had eaten the crisps.
Well, the actual crisps, not the packet.
Yeah, that's what Mr. Kidney is saying.
Where are these people, the enforcers, where...
They're just terribly
when you
bored.
Need them. You know, when people are, like, brazenly throwing packets on the ground and stuff like that. They don't go up to those people, do they? Just target the people who aren't really doing anything. It's broken Britain.
Here's one from Karen. Hi, Adam and Joe. I was in a zoo in Mexico City looking at a giraffe. The security guard said I wasn't allowed to view it from that position. I had to move 2 metres to the right. I replied that it wasn't difficult to see the animal from whichever position. He wasn't impressed. Wow. That's high levels of official officiousness, isn't it?
I'll tell you
in
what
Mexico
it is, John.
City?
I'll tell you exactly what it is.
PC gone mad.
It's PC gone mad.
PC gone completely mad. There he is. PC hello, gone PC gone mad.
Hello, hello, hello.
He's gone mad.
PC gone mad.
I'm a photographer and come up against petty officialdom a lot more these days. The moment I take out a camera on the street. The worst was in Paternoster Square near St. Paul's Cathedral. Other squares are available. I was photographing a businessman for a business magazine and decided to take a couple of shots of him walking towards the camera from about 10 metres back. The man had a few minutes left before having to leave. I have a camera on a tripod and a bloke in a private security guard get-up, complete with bright yellow jacket and walkie-talkie, stands in front of my camera. Yeah. He said I could be doing hostile reconnaissance and won't move. Now, this is a big deal, right? Because lots of professional photographers have signed a petition saying that police in general are abusing anti-terrorism laws.
Exactly.
To stop, and it's actually a big deal amongst the photographic community, and rightly so.
You're not allowed, because generally the pavement is owned by the council.
Right.
And they're allowed to refuse you the right to
but
take photographs.
But that's ridiculous, isn't it? And that's the kind of thing that the entire country should take up pickaxes and flaming brands and just kick out whoever
Russell
tries
brands,
to do that.
Joe Brands, they should pick them all up and definitely sort them out.
There's another good one here. I was in Morrison's buying a Gabby Logan workout DVD, £2, bargain basement. I got to the checkout and the cashier dude noticed, just a dude by the way,
mega dude.
Noticed there was no age certificate on the DVD and started rambling that he should really ID me for the item, but maybe I wasn't the age you should be. Maybe they shouldn't be selling the item at all.
Saucy Gabby Logan.
I explained that it was a workout DVD, not hardcore Gabby Logan porn.
You never know.
I like reading that phrase. He then proceeded to discuss the issue with every single worker at the store. I left, I'm 26, Claire,
oh, for
in Oxford.
Goodness sake.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
That's unbelievable. I would have gone absolutely ballistic at that point.
Can I read you one more?
Come on then.
Final one. This is from Ben. I was outside Leeds train station. Me and my girlfriend were arguing loudly, not loudly, in the station. I'm not sure what it was about. All of a sudden, a community support officer walks over, demands my ID. I refused and asked him what right he had to interrupt my conversation. He looked shocked, then asked me to remain where I was. I replied, "You're going to go and get a real policeman, mate.
Oh, nice.
You're arresting me or detaining me." He said back that he was detaining me. However, I knew he had no right to. I decided to try my luck and run for it. That's the bit I like.
With his girlfriend?
No, wait for it. He chased. I dived down the steps that led to the multi-story car park, ran under the railway bridge and dived into the nearest pub. I sat there with a pint of Tetley's, other beers are available, while I watched the community support officer continually pacing around the surrounding area trying to find me. My girlfriend was even more angry as she was detained and questioned by the police. However, she didn't give my identity away. In retrospect, I was a bit out of order.
That is a disastrous afternoon. How are you going to get over that? That's going to take a lot of...
I like that. They're dumping the girlfriend in it. There's a certain amount of courage.
Running away from the community police officer to get a pint.
Don't you think it takes courage? Because he's got to face her when he gets home. I mean, that's braver than dealing with the officer.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
If you're a new listener to the show, this is an irregular section. Irregular because it's kind of difficult, you know, to listen to and to read out a section of jokes sent in by our listeners. And we kind of demand that they're made up, they're actually authored. And it's very difficult, actually, to tell or test whether a joke is genuinely authored. For instance, one of our favourite ones, my dog Minton ate a shuttlecock, badminton, is apparently a Tim Vine joke.
No.
Somebody sent in an email saying that, you know, we were really enjoying that joke for weeks on end, thinking it was the top of the tips, and it had been made up by a brilliant listener.
Timmy Vine.
Turns out it's a Tim Vine joke.
He's a joke machine, that guy.
So it's hard, you know, there's only a limited amount of wordplay, and there's lots of people
chestnuts
to make it.
Boasting in an open
there was that
foyer.
Whole incident. The one joke we've had that we think is genuinely authored was the Annie Lennox.
Yeah.
One.
Annie Lennox.
You'll know what we're talking about if you're regular listeners. Now, I don't think anyone else had made that one up because it was just so tortured and convoluted. So that's kind of what we're looking for. Jokes that are so peculiar and tortured, they could only ever have been authored by the listener.
I still like some of the simpler ones. And what I've done is I've just entered the joke into a search engine, right? To see how many hits pop up. And so these ones I've tested that way.
Really?
And they haven't popped up.
That's a good test.
Like, I'll give you an example, right? Here's a simple joke that made me chuckle. That I couldn't find any reference for on Google. This is from James Hewitt. I think he's a regular contributor. How much do they pay to play sport at Hogwarts?
Now, yeah. Well, yeah, do you want me to say?
Go on then.
A quid each.
Correct.
A quid each. Now, it's good. But I just can't help thinking that would have been made
up. Of course.
On the set of Harry Potter,
That's what I don't care if it was made up on the set, but it's a question of whether it's proliferated.
Right.
And so I've put it on.
But is it a made up joke?
I put it into Google. I believe that James made it up.
He made it up.
Yeah.
It was just, yeah. Okay, cool. Good. I'm backpedaling. Good.
What have you got?
This is somebody called Katie Rogers from London. Here are a few jokes my boyfriend Tarek has made up recently. He's immensely proud of them, and I've promised to try and be more supportive of his creations. I'm only going to read one of them out, because the other one's too awful.
It often happens that couples submit jokes on behalf of the other member of the couple.
Yeah, we're doing it's a sort of marriage support service we're doing here. What do Mozzies eat for breakfast at Harrison Ford's house?
Oh.
The mosquito toast.
Nice.
You see, now that's probably made up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's a bit rubbish.
Because it's a little lame.
It's a little bit lame.
But in a very sweet way,
that's
like
good.
A little lame boy.
And it's a reference to a sort of good, obscure film.
It's not that obscure. Here's one from James Wright in Cheltenham. He says, I came up with this whilst buying some bike bits for my girlfriend. Here we go. What do you call a cycling rapper? Kanye West.
Oh, you know, that is what you call them, the cycling rappers.
Technically, that is what you call them.
Yeah.
He says, come on, read this out, make a long-standing fan happy. Job done, James! Thanks.
Hi, Adam and Joe. I made up this joke over the summer, but have been reluctant to send it in, as it hasn't received any laughs as yet.
That's my favourite.
Anyway, here goes. Did you hear about the recent competition where you could phone in to win clothing for large predator cats? The competition has ended now, though. When you try calling the number, all you get is an automated message saying, the lions are now clothed. Josh from Reigate.
That's very good.
P.S. Just in case it's not clear, which is highly likely, the lions are now clothed is meant to sound like the lines are now closed. Put that in as a P.S.
I like the explanations.
That's brilliant.
Here's one, and this is a slick joke, but I believe he made it up, right? I'm trusting him. Julian Rawlinson from Warrington says, why did the band The Specials, feel so bloated after their Chinese takeaway? Too much Fu Young.
Nice. Do you want to hear a really long, tortured one?
Yes.
Here is a really bad joke that my friend Kenny has been working on since he heard a documentary about Constantinople on Radio 4 2 weeks ago. It's undergone several incarnations and has involved a great deal of blood, sweat and tears and searching of Wikipedia to get it to the polished perfection it now stands at. Here we go. What did the leader of the Ottoman Empire say when he ordered that his favourite sweets be renamed to Starburst in order to commemorate the renaming of Istanbul?
Tim Vine doesn't tell this one. I don't know.
Punchline, okay? Now, don't expect to get this immediately. Punchline. I can't stand an opal fruit. All right? Okay, now don't worry if that's not funny, because listen.
Constantinople.
Obviously, the humour comes from the fact that that opal fruits were renamed Starburst, an historical move that mirrored the renaming of Constantinople as Istanbul following the fall of the Byzantine Empire. Just as the leader of the Ottoman Empire can no longer stand Constantinople, he can no longer stand opal fruits. Kenny is worried that this joke is so obvious that it has been made before. But I'm sure that's not the case. What did the leader of the Ottoman Empire say when he ordered that his favourite sweets be renamed Starburst in order to commemorate the renaming of Istanbul? I can't stand an opal fruit.
I'm Michael McIntyre, good night.
My girlfriend, aged 32, was refused the sale of a pizza cutting wheel thing at Morrison's in Wood Green. She was visibly bemused, so the cashier reminded her of the knife crime issue in the area.
Oh, my Lord.
Could you damage someone with a pizza slicer?
Yeah, you definitely could. I mean, you wouldn't be allowed to take a pizza slicer on a plane, would you?
No, you wouldn't. But if you were injured by one, it would be quite easy to stitch the bit back in, wouldn't it?
You could just use the cheese to...
To bond it.
Reattach everything, yeah. Yeah. The hot cheese.
Or just fry it up, make a fleshy pizza.
Be delicious.
That'd be revolting. Here's another one from Ray Wake. Hi, once I left my watch in a swimming pool changing rooms, when I phoned up to ask the person in charge of lost property if it was there, I described the watch in detail down to the fact that the face changes colour when one presses the small button on the right side of the watch. He said, yes, we have a watch matching that description and... Hang on, gap while he fiddles with my watch. It does change colour. Oh, how clever. When I said, great, thanks a lot, I'll come and collect it, he said, hang on a minute. How do I know you're the true owner? You could just be anyone phoning up asking for a watch. I said, well, because how would I know there was a watch with a button on the side that changed the colour of the face in the changing room? He said, well, it could be a coincidence. Please tell me the product code written in tiny writing on the back of the watch. When I explained that I clearly had no idea what this number was, he said, well then, in that case, you'll need to bring a photo of you wearing the watch if you want to get it back. He was entirely serious.
Oh my goodness.
And then finally, to cap it all, this is from Matthew in London. I was once in the Detroit Institute of Arts looking at the collection. I was quietly chewing on some gum, minding my own business. A museum guard silently walked up to me and handed me a piece of paper. It said, chewing gum is not allowed in the Detroit Institute of Arts galleries. After reading this information, you may use this piece of paper to place your gum in.
That's polite, though.
That's kind of neat. Just a neat one to round it up with there.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for all your texts and emails. And if you're listening throughout the week, you can email us with more of your run-ins with petty officialdom for Retro Text the Nation on the weekend show that's coming up.
Yeah, the email is adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
Quite a bad bit of talking I did.
That was good. That was good.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
That was the end of the so-called highlights from this week's 6 Music radio show. Now there's just a little time left for one final linky from the two baboon men that you call Adam and Joe.
Wait, says Frog. Duck was holding a can. It was just before our boat trip began. So Duck took the petrol. That's right, says Goat.
He pours the petrol on all the animals.
You're not rhyming it anymore.
Then burns them and eats them.
That is not what happens.
That's what happens
Captain
in my book.
Duck. Captain Duck's got a much cheerier ending, as does this podcast.
Go on then, what is it?
What, the ending of Captain Duck?
No, the podcast.
Oh, right, yeah. So Adam and Joe finished their show.
Off back home they go. Adam on the train, Joe on a plane. Adam to, where is it? Norwich.
Joe to Spain.
Joe to Spain. It's not going to happen.
It's a load of rubbish, isn't it? You were saying that we should write a children's book.
Well, everyone's writing them these days. David Walliams wrote one, do you remember?
Yes, it was even illustrated by Quentin Blake. I was very envious.
That man can hardly hold a pen. And it's illustrated by Quentin Blake, and now it's been nominated for some award.
Well, it's obviously
It's obviously a very good book. I haven't read it. I don't know. It's about cross-dressing or something. But if he can do it, look at Gervais.
Yeah.
He's raking it in hand over fist.
They're doing a film of Flanimals even, aren't they?
Of course they are.
Unbelievable.
So we should really write a children's book. We've discussed this before, I think.
Yeah. Well, we've made some inroads today. I think you'll agree, listeners.
The thing to do would be to do it very fast.
Yeah.
And put very little effort in.
That's true, isn't it?
Really lazy.
It's always the best way with
Make
things.
The illustrator do all the work.
It should be almost an insult.
Yes. That's really awful.
That seems to
and
be what people like.
Watch it take off.
Yeah.
Watch it fly. You know what? Let's do it next week during the records.
We'll be millionaires by the following weekend.
Have a good week, listeners.
Thanks for listening.
I love you, bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
That was Polytechnic with Won't You Come Around. And I'm sorry to tell you this, listeners, but guitarist Denny Hilton left the band in 2007.
Oh, God.
I'm really sorry about that. The four members left have begun to work on new material, so there's light at the end of the tunnel. But I think everybody was very shocked when Denny left in 2007, and the rest of the guys found it very difficult to carry on. But there is going to be... it looks as if there is going to be new material from Polytechnic, so that's okay. I'm very sorry. It's very unprofessional. I just wish Denny would get in touch.
I remember his belt.
I don't know where he is in the world.
I think about his belt.
Why did he leave? Why did he go from the band? What's he doing now?
Adam and Joe
on 6 Music.